Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside AVs podcast for August the 12th, 2022. This is episode 123. On today's show, we'll be talking about the return of the Mayor's Manx Dune Buggy, the Acura Precision EVs tease ahead of its debut, and the Ford F-150 Lightning gets more range and a higher price tag. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside AVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the impeccably polished Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the magisterial Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, the convivial Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. If you're watching this on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hello, everyone.
All right. So let's kick this thing off with news, and then we'll get to what we've been driving this week. So dune buggies were something of a cultural phenomenon in the 60s, and it's basically all because of the Mayor's Manx, which was first created by Bruce Mayer in 1964. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the picture of this new one up here. So originally, though, based on the Volkswagen Beetle floor pan and powered by the Beetle air-cooled engine, it handily won the Baja 1000 in 1967, which it was known at the time as the Mexican 1000. And by handily, it won by like 5 hours. So that's pretty significant. Anyway, it grabbed the people's imaginations, but the company shut down in 71 because hundreds of copies flooded the market and the Mayer lost his patent. And so I think he was a little disillusioned by the whole business at that point. And so, but it was refounded again by Bruce Mayer in 2000. And then they've introduced a couple of other models. I'm not really sure what kind of production happened there, but anyway, the company was bought in 2020 by a venture capital company called Truesdale Ventures, and Freeman Thomas, who is best known for his design work at Porsche, Audi, and Volkswagen, was appointed CEO. All right. So let's look at what we've got here. So it's very much in the style, as you can see, of the original Mayer's Manx. And I think the design is pretty solid here. The powertrain is interesting. Apparently, this will come with either a 40 kilowatt hour or a 20 kilowatt hour pack or a 40 kilowatt hour pack. It's powered by two motors, one for each rear wheel. So rear wheel drive. The spec sheet says 40 kilowatt hour configuration is good for 202 horsepower and 240 pounds of torque. So 0 to 60 is said to be 4 seconds, so plenty quick. DC fast charging is a peak power of 60 kilowatts, so better than a Bolt EV. It's got a 6 kilowatt AC onboard charger. Range is said to be 150 miles for the 20 kilowatt hour pack and 300 for the 40 kilowatt hour pack. Those numbers, they sound extremely optimistic to me, but maybe it's lightweight will help its range better than I think. I don't know. It weighs approximately 1,500 pounds or 1,650, depending on the configuration, which is super light, especially for an electric vehicle. Now, the story says it's going to come out in 2024, but the press kit also says it aims to deliver the first 50 cars in 2023. It's a bit of an odd situation there, but they say the launch vehicles will provide a unique engagement experience with the early adopters who get in on the ground floor by providing feedback to the development team as they refine the production version. So it sounds like to me like they want customers to take part in the development process. I don't know, but Kyle, you tend to like odd cars like this, so hard to tell how well this is going to turn out, and the price hasn't been announced yet.
But. Right. I think it's going to be quite expensive, and they'll probably sell every one they could make ever. There's enough, you know, super fans of these cars. Actually, when the Volkswagen ID.4 launched in America, one of my friends brought his Manx out to the desert so that we could have two ID.4s and the Manx and then a Westphalia all going through on like that cross country drive that Volkswagen did when they launched the ID.4. So it's a cool car. Great heritage with it, and an electric powertrain only makes sense because it's not like people bought these for the engines. They never really drove that great.
Right. Well, it's a Volkswagen floor pan, so and not a lot of, so I don't know. I guess with the bars you get some rigidity, but I there's no cross section in there in the roll cage. So
I don't think that's so much of an issue these days with modern construction. Everything's pretty right. Stiff. And I mean, I don't think that this is, it's not meant to be a performance car. It's like, let's put some tires on it and go in the sand. So yeah, could be really fun to play around with for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say one of our regular viewers, Chris, he actually owned an original. Well, maybe it wasn't Chris Largent. Let's see if I can show this on my phone. He actually owned this. It's not showing up, is it? There it is. Oh, look at that. He shared that with me the other day. Anyway, it's a pretty cool looking dune buggy. And I don't know, dune buggies are still cool. Like, they're really captured. I don't know, Tom, you were around in the. Maybe you were young in the 70s.
60s? Come
on. But in the
70s. Keep making me older, Dom. Thanks a lot.
The mystique, the aura around like the dune buggy was still there. I had friends who were, you know, had, you know, trying to build dune buggies and stuff in their garages and stuff. Yeah. Didn't look like this. But
exactly. That's my exact same experience. I have friends that had them in their driveways that never ran, that they were going to restore it because they bought them cheap after the 60s. Now it's the 70s. They're sitting in the driveway with four flats, maybe a cover over half of it, and they just never got it on the road. I mean, I think the thing looks cool. I liked actually Volkswagen's interpretation a little bit better. I could see where they're going with this. It pays homage to the original. You know, they retain some of the original styling. But, you know, it's cool. No two ways about it. I would take it in a second to drive on the beach, but this thing's not going to be street legal. Is it? Federal safety regulations going to pass this? What are you going to be able to use this for?
That's a good point.
That's my question. Where are you going to be able to drive this? I guess if you're, you know, you have a couple of homes and one of them's on the beach and you want to tool up and down the beach, or maybe if you live in a community that has neighborhood electric vehicles, the low speed, you know, vehicles that you can drive around your neighborhood. I know Florida has a lot of communities like that, but where are you going to be able to drive this? That can't be legal on the highway as it is, right?
It doesn't look like it to me.
Well, I think there's different rules for limited production vehicles, and we don't know how many they're planning on making. But like, you can ride a motorcycle on the street, which to me would be more dangerous than this.
Yeah, that's two wheels, though. Once you have four wheels, it requires a whole bunch of different safety regulations.
But there's also regulations. There's different for very limited production models where you don't necessarily need everything for full homologation, for crash testing, etc. I don't know what those are. I mean, it was shown with the California plate on the back of it, so I think they're intending for it to be street legal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Simon Matthew points out, why would it not be legal? They were always, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, they didn't require seatbelts or airbags or, you know, other safety systems either. In the last 50 years, we've added a tremendous amount of regulation for safety features, which is a good thing. It's limiting in some ways, but it also saved a ton of lives.
Well, we should hear more about it. It's going to be officially unveiled at the Quail. That's a motorsports gathering at the Quail Lodge and Golf Club in Carmel, California. That's out by Monterey on August the 19th. So more details will be available then. It's going to be assembled in California. You know, I'm not even sure, like, it's... Yeah, hopefully we'll learn more about the underpinnings here, because I don't know, is that like a big plastic, molded plastic tub on the body? You know, what's exactly holding up? What's it built on exactly? You know, still a lot of mystery there. And hey, Martin, did you hadn't seen anything about this, had you?
Yeah, the company that bought it from Bruce a year before he sadly passed away. He was in his 90s. I think he was in his 90s when he went on Leno's Garage and took Jay Leno out. Maybe he's in his 80s when he did that, but he was very much, you know, firing an all cylinder, so to speak, until the very end. A really impressive gentleman. And the company that bought his business and are taking this forward, I think I read in the week that they said that this was aimed at people with multiple homes and multiple cars. Like, they know their audience. And, right. and I think that's great. And as we get more EVs on the road, what we need to do more of is look at use case. And, you know, it doesn't happen with the Rimac Nevera that Nico Rosberg just picked up. And yet, you know, no one expects that to be, you know, 50 grand rather than 2 million. And I think this, they could sell this for 100 grand if they want to. And you know, it'll cost them, whatever it costs to make, but as Kyle says, they'll sell everyone they can. And I respect them for saying that this is a, you know, yeah. a rich boy's toy or a rich girl's toy. And fair enough. Now, I remember back when I was maybe 10 or 12. So it would have been late 80s. I was born 78. So I guess maybe I was not quite a teenager. My dad built a beach buggy in the garage. Okay. And that was kind of my first introduction to car stuff. Like, how can my dad build a car? That's impossible. But you know, he ordered the kit. He ordered the fiberglass body.
Okay.
He found a donor chassis. He found the old VW Volkswagen Beetle engine that was on its last legs, and you know, but still worked. And actually, like, as a kid growing up, what was really fascinating is seeing, because he ordered this kind of mail order, I guess back in the 80s, early 90s, it would have been you know, mail order out of a magazine or whatever. But seeing the stuff arrive in boxes, like seeing a wiring loom arrive in a box. And as a kid, I was like, all right, that's a wiring loom. And then helping him attach them, because it was really kind of headlights, indicators, brake lights.
Right.
The bare ignition, minimum. Like the real bare minimum, like 12 volt. And helping him connect all that up, and then seeing, you know, going off to find wheels and tires and all that. It took maybe 6 months as a hobby at the weekend. He's a paramedic by trade. And that was my first introduction to cars. Like, I've always kind of been into fast cars, but that was my first introduction to building something. And so, enormously simple to build if you want to. But this, this will be on a whole different level, making it electric. I can't see this ever being on, you know, you're driving down the highway and one comes past you, but it doesn't need to be. And right. and as for the numbers, like 20 kilowatt hour or 40 kilowatt hour, kind of, if you can fit the batteries into that space, then fill your boots. It won't be about, right, they said 400 kilometers of range, but I mean, in a way, why not? If the only weight of this thing is the battery, why wouldn't the range be that high? It's unnecessary. I don't think I want to drive 400 kilometers nonstop in one of these, but fair play. I'm excited about this. It's cool. It brings back good memories for me.
Okay, sweet. I guess we'll find out in a week or two. It's the 12th already, so that's the 19th. So I guess next Friday we get a lot more details on what's going on with this. But yeah, I expect it to be at like $100,000, and even then, man, it's... making cars is like difficult and expensive, and so good luck, because they're going to need all the luck they can get. But it looks great, and hopefully they'll be successful with it. So we finally got a glimpse of the first electric vehicle from Acura. Its full reveal comes on the 18th of August, so I guess that's like next Thursday. So we'll be talking about this next week too. But this gives us a pretty good idea of what to expect. So for starters, we know it's going to be built on the Ultium platform and assembled at GM's Spring Hill, Tennessee plant alongside the Cadillac Lyriq. So I don't know if you have a shot of that, Martin, that you can throw up for us, just of the front. Oh, they've released a little kind of video thing, right? It's like a pretty short glimpse of the front and a little bit of the front fender there. But since Acura is the luxury brand for Honda, it's going to be interesting to compare this to the Lyriq. Like, it appears that the exterior shape is unique, but will it share the five-link suspension that's on the Lyriq, for instance? We don't know. But when the wraps come off, we believe it's going to be called the Acura ADX, which is a trademark they applied for last year. Tom, anything about this grab your attention?
So from the limited view, what we can see on the front, it definitely seems to be, at least the front end, Asian styling, you know, inspired, particularly Chinese. It looks to me like it could be a Neo or a BYD or something, that front end. Okay. That's just my initial impressions. I can't wait to see the whole thing.
Even though it's lit up, I kind of get that Acura shield shape going on with the
yeah, LED I'm just lights. Looking at the headlights, the lower part, the front where the airflow is. It just, that looks like the typical front end of a, you know, crossover SUV that we see coming out of all of the Chinese brands, to me at least. And maybe once the wraps are completely off it, it'll look different. But that was just going off my initial impression. When I first saw this video, that's what I thought of.
Right. So, Kyle, I know this is not much to go on here, and we know you're not that into concept cars, but I don't know. What are your impressions this little bit?
Yeah, I would say styling doesn't really matter. Interesting to see Honda and Acura getting more into electric with this partnership. We knew it was coming. Here it is. Great. Should be a pretty good platform. I haven't driven the Lyriq yet, so we're not totally sure. Dominic, you've driven it. I haven't driven it. I'm not really sure how it drives, but I'm pretty sure it's going to have its own character, its own tuning from a suspension standpoint. So they'll be able to dial in the car to how Acura wants it to be.
Right. Even if it has the same hardware, like the same five-link suspension, whatever, they could do different shocks. They could do and definitely the tuning of it all.
Damper.
It could be,
if it's an air suspension, you can dial in how you want. Damper. If it's adaptive, they could program in different settings that you can really change the character of the car with software or just with a few bits of metal.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that built it with the partnership with GM. I'm not sure how long they'll stick together like that. You know, I guess it depends on how this initial product turns out, as well as the Honda Prologue, which this doesn't look like that at all either. That's kind of like a very smooth looking vehicle, like all the lines on the, you know, kind of flat round. That doesn't even sound right, but there's no like big styling creases alongside the Honda Prologue. But anything else we want to talk about with this thing? That's the Honda Prologue we're looking at now, I think. Yeah. Or a render of what it looks like.
Yeah, a render.
Yeah. And Tom, you have anything more to say about the Acura?
Well, I mean, as far as the partnership goes, they obviously, you know, partnered with GM because they realized they were so far behind and didn't have the maybe the time and the investment to get caught up to speed quickly. So I definitely think this is stopgap. You know, it can't be a policy moving forward where, you know, Honda's going to rely on GM powertrains and platforms for their vehicles, you know, as we move into more and more electrics. I mean, I wouldn't think that would be the game plan. I think this is just okay. You know, we misread the market. We need to get caught up. Who could we partner with until we have our own program completely rolling, which I would imagine they are furiously trying to build right now. And so the next generation of vehicles will be completely designed in-house with Honda. I mean, that's what I would expect, at least.
Right. And I guess plus two with this new the new federal incentive, that kind of incentivizes them to actually produce electric vehicles in the state. So they're kind of lucky that they did choose this partnership with GM, because now they can build them in the states and get in on that incentive if their battery materials are sourced properly, at least. Yeah. Anything else we want to say about that? No. Okay. So let's talk about something else a little more visceral, more on hand. So the Ford F-150 hasn't been out for very long, but already it's getting a significant price hike. Basically, I think Ford is tacking on like $7,000 to all the different trims. So it's not all taking, though. It's giving something back. The Ford Lightning Pro standard battery, for instance, now it gets 10 miles more of range to give it a total of 240 EPA miles. And they threw in some trailering features as well, I believe. So, Tom, I guess you lucked out being near the front of the line and saved yourself some money. But I understand that the next wave of reservation holders has been invited to order now. So will they have to pay these new prices?
They will, Dom. And one thing I want to make clear is some of the news sources completely misreported this. Okay. And reported that Ford was opening up the ordering banks again. Like, you, if you don't have a reservation, you can now reserve one, but you're going to pay more. A number of sites reported it that way, which is not correct. They're not opening up for new reservations. What they did was, everybody that had reservations before they stopped accepting them, they broke them up into different groups. And there was a first wave of reservations. I actually was in the second wave, right at the beginning of the second wave. I didn't make the first wave, and I don't even know how, because I reserved it like a minute after it was available. But so I was in the second wave, and now they're opening up for the third wave. So yeah, I just made it. This third wave of reservation holders are being invited to turn the reservation into a formal order. And then you have to give your dealership $500 in addition to the $100 that you already gave. I mean, all that take comes off the price of the vehicle. And then you convert it into a hard order. They've been told before that that happens that these new prices are going into effect. And quite honestly, I really shouldn't surprise too many people. And nobody likes to hear price increases. You know, it really is disappointing. You saw how Rivian completely mishandled how they did it. They were actually going to, you know, make people that had, you know, were told what their price is, give them a new price. You know, Ford, you never really locked in a price. You knew what it was going to cost because you could go online and kind of configure it, but you were not allowed to configure your vehicle and get a contract with a total price. We've had 9% inflation in the last year. You know, it's hard to understand why people are surprised that vehicles aren't going to be going up. Everything's going to be going up. Buy anything else from any other commodity, and the prices have gone up dramatically. Go to restaurants and see how much it costs to buy a steak now compared to last year. And, you know, Darren Palmer, I interviewed Darren Palmer a couple of weeks ago. He tipped his hat to this during that interview, because I was talking to him about the Pro version. And in my range test, we're going to get into next, I did the range test on the standard range battery. I was sitting in the truck driving it saying, I think I bought the wrong Lightning. I should have bought the Pro with standard range battery pack. It's half the price of my truck. I was driving a truck that, you know, with the standard range battery pack, the Pro, that it starts at $39,974. But even with the options, it had max tow package, it had Pro Power onboard, it had a couple other things. The price was $46,000. I'm driving this thing saying, sweet, this is crazy. It's half the price of my car. So I asked Darren, how can you sell this at $40,000? That's crazy. It's not only the best deal of any pickup truck, it's the best deal maybe of any car you can buy, any vehicle. And he kind of like said, yeah, well, we're going to have to look at pricing with the current commodities market. So we knew this was coming. And if you look at the price increases there, it's about the same price increase for the Pros as it is for the extended range Lariats and Platinums. So if you go as a percentage of the cost, you're paying a much bigger percentage for the lower priced vehicles. And it should be that way, because quite honestly, it was too inexpensive. It was too cheap. The price increase actually now is really where it should be. Now, you could say maybe the higher trim items are a little bit more expensive, but listen, that's where we are in the market right now. And one thing I saw was tons of comments from people on on Twitter, on our article, that said, you know, perfect timing. As soon as that we announced this $7,500, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but this had nothing to do with that. The Lightning already qualifies for the $7,500 federal tax credit. It's not like they were getting something that currently wasn't there. And I don't even think it's going to qualify for it moving forward with the battery sourcing components and everything. So, you know, I know it was very bad optics, you know, the week after this new tax extension, tax credit thing gets passed, that's announced. But that, you know, as I said, you can believe anything you want, but there's no way that these two things are related, in my opinion, because you're not going to, I don't think Ford's going to be able to realize it in the first place. It's because of inflation and all the prices, all the commodities have gone up. So, okay, there's the pricing end of it. The other announcements, as you mentioned, were that they're going to have a Pro Trailer Hitch Assist, it's called, which is a pretty big thing. It's the first, it's an industry first where when you're hitching a trailer, the steering, the throttle, the brake inputs, all of that is controlled by the vehicle. So that's a pretty big option. And it's, if you get the tow technology package, it's included. And for people like me that have the tow technology package already, it's going to be added as an over-the-air update. So that's included. As far as the range on the standard range battery pack, the EPA range rating is going to increase by 10 miles. I mean, this is just on paper. They made the heated seat standard on the on the standard range battery pack. And that allowed a lower load on the HVAC system, so it was more efficient. You know, it's not going to do you any good in the summer. And it's basically on paper. They really didn't do anything to make the vehicle go further, in my opinion. It's just all how it's certified. So there's not much there. And then also they're dropping Atlas Blue, Ice Blue Silver, and Smoke Quartz Metallic colors, and adding Avalanche Gray and Azure Blue. And the Azure Blue is really cool. I might have gotten that if that was available. But so that's really the updates. As far as the pricing goes, you know, it's the way of life today. All the vehicles are getting price increases. Take a look at across the board. And I think Ford made their pricing so competitive on the Lightning that they didn't have, I think they were already going with very thin margins because they were really wanted to come out with a truck with that was comparable price-wise to their gas versions, that they just couldn't absorb this. And I mean, they set the pricing. The pricing was announced in May of last year. That's 15 months ago. So the pricing was probably locked in 16 or 17 months ago. I mean, that's when they announced it 15 months ago. And the world has changed dramatically in the last 16 months. Supply chains, back then it was just a chip shortage. That created a ripple effect across the entire supply chain industry that has made prices for everything go up. So, you know, to me, I can't kill them on this personally.
Right.
I don't like it, but I can't kill them on it.
Kyle, any thoughts about that? I saw someone pointed out there's a good deal on the Ford F-150 Lightning Pro near to you yesterday.
The truck's not available till January, and there's already a list for it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's hard to get them. I think the whole reservation process with existing dealerships has proven that it doesn't work. It's really annoying for the end users, for the people who are reserving the trucks, to have to go through this entire process. And then the last bit, the most important bit, is handled by a third party. Now, most dealers are selling their ordered vehicles when they come in at MSRP, not marking them up. But we have heard of other things. But it's also like, okay, if it was a Tesla or a Rivian or a Lucid, if there was another configuration available, let's say a truck comes in, someone doesn't want it, they would just rematch that truck to the next one in line. What's happening here is those trucks are not getting rematched to the people who have ordered them. They're getting $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 price adjustments, market adjustments tacked on top of them. And so you can skip the line if you pay. Now, I just heard of a friend who bought an F-150 Lightning this week for $2,000 over MSRP, walked in, the dealer had 10 of them available on the lot, and he paid two over. And I'm like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. Add me to the list. And as soon as I called them up, they were all sold. So, you know, not that I'm really in the market for the truck. I just, you know, how could you not go and get one of those at that point? Those trucks should be matched to the next reservation holders in line. They're not. So free market, go buy it if you can. I just think the whole process sucks. I think the price adjustments are where the truck should have been priced anyway. So I don't think the pricing's out of line. I just think they probably knew this going into the whole thing, wanted to get that 39.9 number for the base truck. We all spoke about it. We all knew, like, hey, you're probably not ever going to get one for this price. They've sold a handful of pros, I'm sure, or less, for whatever that $40,000 number was. Yeah. And now they're all, you know, 46 something base. So I think the pricing's fine. That's not the big issue. The big issue to me is just reservation systems don't work. And some of the existing, or I should say the new guys, can't even figure out reservation systems anyway. Not sure how to do it any better, though.
Right. I mean, well, Polestar does the reservation system, and they, I think they do it more, you know, along the lines of like a Tesla or Lucid, where, you know, they're not charging over MSRP, right?
No, some dealers are, because ultimately it's up to the dealer. If it goes into used, if they use it as a demo, they can then price that car whatever they want to do. There's no, because it's not direct manufacturer sales, they do a really good job of controlling their inventory, which is if a car shows up at a dealership, it's for that specific confirmed order. But there's a Volvo dealer here in town who handles Polestar as a separate division. And yeah, they can do whatever they want.
Some Ford dealers have actually taken customer orders and canceled them on the customer, returned their $600, the $100 plus $500, and then put the vehicle on the lot as inventory. Now, when Ford finds out about this, that they can have a problem with, that they can control because they've canceled one of their customer orders. But they have to find out about it. The customer has to report it. I've through you know, my online presence with my State of Charge YouTube channel and Twitter, I've had a number of Lightning owners message me and give me the whole details, show me emails from the dealerships that have said, we're sorry, your order's been canceled, you're going to receive a check in the mail. And then that vehicle with that VIN ends up online for like $40,000 more than MSRP the next week. So, I mean,
that's not right.
That's terrible when that happens. But it is happening. But I will say that's not the norm. You know, most of the dealers that I know and come in contact with have been delivering the customer orders as promised. Right. My dealership's done a great job. I know other dealers here in New Jersey area. I have friends that have gotten the Lightnings, and there's actually another one in my town. I live in a really small town. It's weird that there's another person in this town that ordered one early enough like I did. And he got it from a different dealer than I did. And it was the same thing. He said MSRP. They told them MSRP, they sold it at MSRP. So we're going to see these strange edge cases, but that is happening. And all I can tell you is if it does happen to you, get Ford involved, call customer service, email everybody, because Ford will make it right. Because the dealers, Ford's limited on what they can do, the power they have over the dealerships. But right. In that case, if they cancel a customer's order, they can get involved and they can get your truck back.
Right. Okay.
Good and to know. Can you just, I wasn't clear on who's affected by this. So can for idiots like me, can you run through that again? So so Ford put it on sale a year and a half ago, whenever it was. And so what's the difference between reservation was simply $500 or $600?
So let me explain, Martin. If you were one of the people that were able to reserve one, as soon as it became available, you had to put a $100 reservation and get in line. Once Ford took in 225,000 reservations, they stopped accepting reservations. Okay, so now you can't reserve one. So then what they did was they broke up the reservations into groups or waves. And in January, they sent out emails inviting group one to configure your truck. At that point, you had to order it. Yes.
Right.
So you configured it. You put everything you wanted, all the color, your trim, all that stuff. And you chose your dealer and you sent the dealer a $500 check, or you went there, handed them a check. Right. And now you have a locked in order. So wave one and wave two had locked in orders, paid their deposit. I was in wave two. Not everyone in wave one and wave two have gotten their trucks yet, because there's a bunch of them made, but sitting in front, and they're still in production. But now they're opening up wave three orders.
And they pay a higher price.
Yes, they're going to pay a higher price.
Oh, that sucks. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so if you had $100 down, it does a bit like the Cybertruck, which was never arriving for $39.
Which won't go for $40,000 either, let's face
right.
it.
You no put your that $100 does not get you...
No.
Pricing, you don't get the pricing. So and that's the same with the new Inflation Reduction Act. At the minute, Ford gets $7,500 federal tax credit. We don't know enough about the batteries going inside them to know from the 1st of January, presuming it gets passed and signed into law, whether they'll get that from the 1st of January. But you have to have an existing order before Biden signs it that moment. And so if you've got your reservation doesn't count, you have to have an order a physical contract, an order of purchase, and then you'll get the federal tax credit. But if he signs it this week or next week, and you haven't, okay, now I understand. That's cool.
Now, if he signs it this week or next week, you still, as long as you have a signed order by the end of this year.
Oh, so it's the end of the year, right? Yeah. Okay, I understand. I understand.
So,
okay.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that later in the news.
Yeah,
because we're going to get into the weeds on that.
Okay. We could talk about that now if you want.
Well, I don't want to go out of order. I might get yelled at by Dom. I know we have strict rules here on the Inside EVs podcast.
Which
is going to bring us to another story that we were going to cover. Lucid and Rivian have sent out emails to their customers saying, because they're concerned the customers are going to lose their tax credit, which they will if this passes.
They will.
They're telling all of their reservation holders, because they have reservation holders like Ford does, to sign a binding contract before the end of the year.
Wow.
And as long as they have a binding contract signed, they'll still get the tax credit. So Ford may end up doing that also. They may end up saying all of our reservation holders send them out a form, and then they will qualify retroactively for the federal tax credit,
which is a big deal.
Yeah.
So
Jordan
said this is more. It is. It's insanely. It's so ridiculous that this is what we have to deal with. That this is the best we can do. The way they structured this federal tax credit. It's. I don't know. I'm just so disgusted with it. It's a shame.
Yeah.
Jordan says this is more complicated than Tenet, which was a movie, which was a little difficult to follow exactly what the hell was going on there.
And it is. He's right. It's ridiculous. And,
right.
And I believe that it was made this way by Manchin purposely as a poison pill.
Yep.
I don't think he had any intention of really making this a legitimate EV tax credit. It was, okay, I'll approve it under these circumstances. And Biden was so desperate to get this thing pushed through, they accepted horseshit, period.
Yeah, and that's true. Yeah, that is true. It's too, no one gets it from the 1st of Jan. I don't know any car that will qualify from the 1st of January.
Right. I don't know. Like, not for the full thing, at least. I'm not really sure because I kind of like to find out because I'm still like looking at getting a Chevy Bolt soon. Actually, I was looking at put my Spark into the one of the online car dealers thing. You know, sell your car to them, and it's still like way more than what I paid for it. So I think I need to take advantage of this like really soon.
Do it now.
Yeah. Except then I'm gonna be carless, and I was like, "This is gonna be," which is not the worst thing. Except I live in a city.
Hey, I thought you were driving the Model 3.
Well, hopefully, I need to come up. I need to talk to you actually, and just it's do the
sitting do right the timing out there. Thing.
Right, but I heard your video, and we'll talk about. I heard the sounds it was making in your video, so I don't know. I need to get in touch and just work on the timing because I got to get a ticket to go to Denver and need to figure out the timing of all that. And so I might take some days off, vacation days, if they'll let me have them while I drive it, maybe to through Canada. In my mind, that's kind of what I want to do. I wanted to go to Calgary, but that's like an extra like day of traveling.
Wow. Just a day. Go for it. You can work remote as long as you have internet.
Yeah. I mean, that's all. Yeah.
Just go for it.
I've never been to Calgary, and I have some friends that I haven't seen in many, many years, and that'd be awesome. But
yeah, why wouldn't you go through Banff on the way, go up through Montana, go through Banff, see all the cool, crazy stuff, Calgary, and then go through Flatlands.
Okay. Yeah, you're making it sound, it sounds better than just like driving like straight across and then going through like Chicago and everything, you know?
Oh, that's like the worst drive you could ever do.
Right. I'd rather go through the prairie provinces, you know?
Yep.
All right.
There's plenty of chargers.
Right. They do have like all along the Trans-Canada Highway, there's lots of Tesla chargers. And there's also Petro-Can, the Canadian state. I don't know if it's a state gas company now or what's it used to be anyway.
Yeah, but they also have Flow chargers. There's a whole bunch of different ones. And I think we're going to retrofit the charge port before you take it to accept CCS charging. So you can choose CCS or superchargers no matter where you are.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. How's that work?
I don't know. You just swap the charge port, rip it out with a chainsaw, and then put a new one in, something like that.
Okay. It sounds interesting. I'll look forward to seeing that video.
Yeah, it's been done a bunch. It's just the newer chart. The old charge ports don't have the CCS communication module. The
right.
new ones do. So it looks identical. It's right. still the Tesla port. It just has the comm box in there.
Right. So when you put an adapter on it, it'll communicate properly with the CCS charger.
Yeah, and it works great. I just used it a whole bunch because I went to California last week in the Model S and right. used the CCS a bunch, and it was great. It really helped in areas with not great superchargers.
Mm-hmm. Right on. So there was a little news over in Tesla land I wanted to hit real quick before we move on to talk about some good stuff or talk about what we've been driving. I guess it's all good stuff, right? So Elon Musk confirmed that the Tesla Semi will enter the market later this year. I think that's pretty cool. So the Semi is going to be made ahead of Cybertruck. And I believe they're making that at a building close to the Gigafactory 1 in Nevada, just like across the – there's some connected roads. If you look from the satellite view down, there's like a new building went up there recently. And I believe that's where they're making them. I'm not sure what there's to say about this except that, you know, we've been waiting for 5 years for this. So, yeah, bring it on. I don't know. Tom, anything to say?
Elon said it was coming – quite a few times. So, right. You know, we can't take what Elon says, you know, as the Bible. So I hope it comes later this year. It's been 5 years since they announced it. It was supposed to launch in 19. So it's more than twice as long now than we're at. Hopefully it comes. I think we need a lot of, you know, long range, big trucks like this for transportation. I think they'll work fantastically. It's easy to set up the high speed charging infrastructure along major trucking routes, and I'm all for it. I just, you know, we got to take what Elon says with a grain of salt, if not a 50-pound bag of it.
Sure. I was just thinking that actually this might mean that they have more confidence in their ability to produce the new 4680 cells, which I believe that the Semi will get. So that was like a limiting factor for them, I believe, in the production of the Semi and Cybertruck, because it takes so much batteries, but they didn't have this new battery design, you know, really up and running in any volume to make this kind of the number of vehicles they would need to make. Yeah. I don't know. Kyle, anything you want to say about that before we move on?
Can't wait to see how it works in the real world with real loads, with all this weight of the battery packs. We don't really know how these will be used, where they'll be used, and where the infrastructure is going to go in. As far as I'm aware, there's no publicly accessible mega charger yet that trucking companies can put in. We know Tesla is the best at installing charging infrastructure, and I think that's sort of where we're coming to. Right now, all the products are great, cars, trucks, buses, and it's all about infrastructure to support these purchases, these decisions. And so, yeah, really looking forward to seeing how this all works into the future.
I wonder if electric trucking will change the demographic of the people who work in that industry, because Tom, you mentioned a podcast or two ago about the real problems that the US is facing in terms of, you know, an aging trucking population, and young guys and girls don't want to get into it as a career, not a sexy career. But I wonder if having nicer vehicles to drive, having Tesla involved will, I don't know, maybe make a few people who want to do their apprenticeship or something, or make it as a career choice they wouldn't have done before. What if it'll change what if going electric will change how people view trucking and delivery? Because we need, the idea they're all going to be autonomous tomorrow and driving around on their own is nonsense. It may happen one day, but I hope that maybe that it can and can provide better working conditions for people who are, that's a sedentary job for much of the time, and that's not always good for your health. So hopefully a nicer day at the office, I guess, for some of those people. I'd be interested to see if a different kind of person wants to drive it. I don't know.
So hopefully, as you mentioned, we are dramatically short on truck drivers. Every outfit is trying to hire them, and you have companies saying they can't get goods transported mm-hmm. across the country because we don't have enough trucks available. So, you know, it's hopefully that'll inspire it.
The Puppy V says the new trucker demographic is going to be robot.
It's not, though, which, is it? It's not.
Not yet, but we'll see.
And I was talking to someone who founded an AI company a few weeks ago. I used to work at Google, and headed up their autonomous division and left to start his own company. And just what they're working on is insanely brilliant. But the idea that we're going to flick a switch and trucks are going to be driving themselves around, it's not happening anytime soon. So
right,
we need there people. We need people to drive trucks.
There was an autonomous company with trucks that had an incident with one of their vehicles actually recently. So yeah, still not prime time. No. So also in Tesla land, Elon Musk seems to they mentioned that Tesla is in talks with the Ontario government for a Canadian gigafactory. So that came as kind of a shock or a surprise, at least to me. Like, that's like, I didn't, you know, spend a lot of time with this, but
they'll go where the best incentive is. And that's not a criticism of Tesla. That is how any business works. So
sure.
Canada have done a great job at attracting, mining companies, and that's fortunate that the Inflation Reduction Act, the language has all changed from the US to North America, because there's a lot of investment going into Canada, and I think that's it makes a lot of sense now that the next 10-12 years of the tax credit is panned out. And remember that for commercial vehicles it's 40k, so for the Tesla semi truck it's a 40 grand incentive for commercial vehicles. That changes all of the numbers.
That's significant.
So, yeah, like, we haven't talked about that yet, or a great deal. So yeah, investing in Canada, very smart move.
Right. Okay. I was a little surprised, because since it's so close to North America, and we have, like, I guess they foresee a greater volume than what of sales than what these two other factories that we have now in the North America can produce, I guess. I don't know. It's a lot. I was thinking maybe more India would be like the next location, because there's a huge market there, and it's not being served. And you have to kind of have to source things from India to sell it in India, to avoid, like, whatever tariffs or different, you know, they have a lot of barriers to trade there. So I was surprised by the Canadian announcement. It's not even an announcement.
Not actually an announcement.
Yeah, right. No, someone just saw there was some tech, they had to make it public where Tesla was negotiating or talking to the government about setting one up. So it's not set in stone yet, but it's a strong possibility, I guess we could say.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. So this other one last thing with Tesla I thought was pretty remarkable. So I thought worth mentioning, the Model Y and Model 3 were the best selling cars in California for the first half of this year. 42,320 and 38,993 respectively. So I remember at one point a few years back, some were predicting that Tesla's California sales would tank, because not only are they very commonplace now and so not very special anymore, but most of the people interested in buying one would have theirs. So, you know, sales would drop off the cliff, you know, they would say. So obviously, this was a very flawed theory, because now in 2022, sales have increased 82.2% over the first half of, like, 2021. So year over year sales in the first 80% growth. That's crazy growth in a relatively mature market. So I just want to say kudos to Tesla for that achievement. I don't know if anyone wants to say anything about this at all.
Just that's incredible. That's
right.
Awesome. Good on you, Tesla. Congratulations. That's fantastic. Number one and two in the state in sales. That's just amazing.
Right. Especially after all this time too, right? It's not like a new thing. You know, there's a huge
cars anymore, either one of them, you know,
and right.
They just keep increasing in sales. That's fantastic.
Doctor had a good expression there. Doctor who says, Tesla's in California are like pigeons, basically. So let's see what else we have here. So really quickly before we get to what we're driving, VinFast is going to bring electric scooters to the U.S. I just mentioned this because when I was in Vietnam with VinFast earlier this year, I got to ride the scooters, and it was like part of the best part of the trip for me. I had such a blast, like, just driving around this little island on the scooters. They're going to make them here, though, so that's kind of weird or significant, I guess, and I understand they're going to sell them in VinFast stores. So I don't know. The ones we drove were like very, I think, early kind of prototypes. Some of them were better than others. The one I was on was great. It was awesome. But anyway, that's just something I wanted to mention because it's coming. The Porsche Taycan Turbo S tops Tesla Model S Plaid on the Nürburgring. So there's a new Nürburgring record for production electric cars, like 2 seconds faster or something. I'm not sure if there's anything we want to say about that, but I know that Elon's pretty competitive. And so I would not be surprised if he's already put a plan into motion to take that back. I don't know. But as you were saying, Tom, you mentioned that, no, it wasn't Tom. Somebody else mentioned that the Nico Rosberg took delivery of the first Rimac Navara.
Yeah, and then took Mate for a drive, brilliant because he was so green. But that's because Formula One drivers aren't human. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So actually, I'm looking forward to seeing if Nico actually takes his car to Nürburgring. That would be freaking awesome because I don't know. I have like great expectations for that car. It seems like it handled really well. Like, so Nico,
yeah, it should do. €2 million or something. Well, the nice thing is when you buy a car that expensive, they even put his signature on a little plaque inside the car, which I didn't get with my MG ZS. And I might call MG and complain about why wasn't my signature embossed on a plaque in the car?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What? Isn't every customer the most important customer?
That's right. You're a celebrity.
I thought I was. It's Mr. great. Yeah, so go and watch the handover video. I was going to call it delivery, but he goes to the factory. And then there's the second video where he takes Mate out for a drive in his car, which is great and fascinating. And also, go and watch it because Mate talks about how he believes everyone in the company should be a shareholder, how he shouldn't be the highest paid person in the company.
Right.
And when Rosberg asks a couple of difficult questions about what's it like running Bugatti, like this was a guy 10 years ago modding a BMW in his garage.
He was finishing high school.
Yeah, like what's it like running Bugatti? He didn't give the politician's answer. He's like, no. Yeah, the old management did it one way and I do it another way. Like and he I won't spoil the whole video, but he's like, I believe in complete transparency. If I've given you a job in the company,
right,
you should know how the company works. Like, are we making money or not, or how, what's this? And and he said, you know, you go from a mega corporation at Volkswagen where everybody is just doing their job so they don't get fired to, well, actually, now you're owned by or you're run by Rimac, which is, he believes in total transparency. So everybody who is the cleaner up to the CEO or whatever engineer has visibility of whatever they want. And it's like, wow, this guy, I want him to be my best friend. He's just such a dude.
This is a great guy, right?
So go and watch that video. It's on Rosberg's channel. It's brilliant. Go watch it.
Yeah, he seems like a genuinely really great down to earth guy, which is fantastic to see him have so much success. That's awesome.
Right. And Kyle, are you going to meet him in a few weeks? Is that happening yet?
Let's just wait till it all comes together before we say anything.
Okay. Okay. Well, hopefully that works out because that'd be great. Okay, so let's just talk about what we've been driving this week, because I don't know. I have this other one thing I guess we could mention real quick, that NIO is going to produce battery swap stations in Hungary, meaning that I guess they're going to roll out their whole battery swap strategy in Europe, I would guess, with this.
Yeah, so there's already one going in at that charging station that I did that review of with the 70 plugs in Zusmarshausen. They're building one right next to the supercharger there.
Okay, that's interesting. So we don't need to talk about battery swapping this week, but maybe we will soon once we have more visibility. Maybe we can get Neil to sit in and talk to us about that. Do we talk with Neil at all? Tom, yeah, do you talk with Neil?
I know some people at Neil in Europe, so they can they can come and talk about their battery swapping.
That would be interesting, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, very much so.
What do you guys in the audience
look? Think? They're going to be in. Look, they'll be in comments. They'll be in 25 countries, 25 European countries in 2025, and I believe it. So this year, they're opening about to in the autumn will be Germany, Denmark, Sweden, I think, and then they'll be in 25 in the next 2 years. So yeah, let's talk about them more because they're here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. All right. So what we were driving this week, Kyle, I was hoping you could give us a bit of a Rivian ownership update. I see you had you got back from Europe and you jumped into Rivian and you had an update to the car right away. So how'd that go?
So I actually, the truck's been driven pretty much the whole time I was gone. We let some local journalists drive it. We let some friends drive it. And so it's got almost 8,000 miles on it now, which is getting up there, which is pretty good. So, yeah, it's been doing really great. Got a software update that improves the thermal performance, especially while charging. And I haven't done any crazy tests yet, but I certainly will very soon. Overall, I would say that it's just, gotten a little bit polished up. I think they retuned the suspension in some of the newer updates where it's so much softer in standard mode even than what it was before. And really? So I think it drives better. I think the charging performance is better and it's all gotten good. And it's got dog mode now, which is awesome.
Sweet. So it's even cushier. Is it still not as cushy as the F-150 Lightning though, right?
Well, the F-150 Lightning, there's a difference between cushy and then like just like this luxury experience, which is still controlled but soft. And yeah, definitely a more sophisticated suspension and more sophisticated feeling than F-150 Lightning. F-150 Lightning is almost floaty on the front axle and not so much a good way. And so, I think they did an amazing job on the suspension, but it's not held up perfectly. My charge port's all messed up on the front. It's like not grabbing and connecting, and I could like rip it out the truck and it's not doing so great. I don't know what happened, but someone bumped it. Just, you own a car, things will happen to it. So that's got to get fixed. It's got wind noise from one of the windows and the suspension, like rolling through drive-throughs when you accelerate and decelerate and you get a little bit of movement on the truck. It's like squeak, 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 squeak. And so that's got to get fixed because it's driving me nuts. Also, similar to the review truck that we had, it seems that when you get them from the factory, the half shafts are really tight, which means when you hit the accelerator pedal and then it goes to regen, the truck just accelerates and slows down. What's happening now on this one, and the same thing that we noticed when we had the other white truck to review, is there's a lot of drivetrain lash and slop, I think, from the half shafts rocking. It goes clunk, clunk every time you load up the drivetrain, either backwards or forwards with regen. And it's almost to the point where it kind of drives me nuts driving it around town. Truck drives great, but as soon as it goes regen, I hear clunk, 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 clunk from all four, and then the truck slows down. It's kind of frustrating. Other than those things, though, there's still, I still believe there's not one vehicle that can do everything this truck can do. I've towed with it the other day, 6 hours of towing. It did amazing. No issues at all. Really, really love the truck. We're going to go off-roading with it this weekend again. It's just really amazing.
Maki Evlog says maybe that's Liver Patrick. This is the clunk drove me nuts. I think they were maybe hanging out with Jordan. I think Jordan had it for a while.
They borrowed the truck. They had it for a bit.
Okay, right on. Yeah, it doesn't sound like ideal. Like lash in a.
They all do it. I've driven a whole bunch of them now, and they all seem to come great from the factory, and then very quickly get clunky. And I've spoken to other Rivian owners. They've brought them in for service and Rivian just says it's as designed, it's normal, and so it's not even worth like getting it figured out. But it's sort of frustrating.
And I've never experienced that, but I haven't driven Rivians that are old, Kyle. You know, I've had a couple of them that I've driven besides the media loans. A friend of mine has one here, but I drove it when he first got it. And I didn't experience that. So that's a little troubling to hear that this is developing on all the vehicles. That can't be as designed. I'm sorry. You think after 2,000 miles, it should start making noise?
Yeah. And honestly, mine did it new, but not nearly as bad as it is now.
Okay.
So like when I first got it, I drove it. I literally got it with 5 miles on the odometer. Nothing. As soon as it hit 10 miles on the odometer, it started. I mean, like, I think it's just the way that these things are designed. Now, I really hope they come up with an updated part because it's the only reason that I jump in the Model S instead of the Rivian to get across town. And now it's a very Kyle-specific thing to be annoyed by these very small problems, right? Where I just want the best perfectly tuned drivetrain for driving around. That's why I got a Plaid, because Tesla knows how to do that better than anyone. And it just shows that the Rivian, like, yeah, everything is kind of cool, but it just this rocking noise is kind of annoying.
Hmm. Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll have to keep our eye out for that. I know we had we have a review that went up last Friday, actually, on our Inside EVs YouTube channel, a short review of the Rivian. That Clint Simone did. But yeah, I hadn't heard about this lash or this noise yet. So I guess that's something to look out for, because I don't know. That sounds like not ideal. I don't know.
Yeah. Keep in mind, like, if you're reviewing a car, this is way in the nitty gritty, you know, nerd section of drivetrain tuning. So most reviewers, I don't think they're going to say it's electric. It's a truck, does the stuff that it says it does on the, you know, on the box. But when you live with a vehicle, that's where you start picking up on these things to become annoying. There's so much to evaluate when you have a vehicle for five days or 7 days that this would be pretty far down on the list. But it's definitely getting worse, and it's definitely, like, okay, kind of annoying. And then you just jump in the Model S, or I drove the e-tron around yesterday, and it's like, whoa, okay, here's how it's supposed to be.
Well, that's, you just said what leads me to believe that it's not as designed. You keep saying it keeps getting worse. And if it was something that was as designed, it shouldn't keep getting worse, right? I mean, it should be, you know, like, that's what I don't follow here. You know, if it's getting louder the longer you own it, that means something is wearing or doing what it's not supposed to be doing. You know, that's not good.
All I can say is what Rivian has told everyone about the issue, right? I don't know. To me, it's frustrating, and I hope they fix it. But I think their answer is just either we don't know how to fix it, and so they just say that's how it's supposed to be. You know, who knows? But that's just what Rivian has said, which is what I have to go off of, because they're the ones who made the truck.
I get the clunk on the MG if I put it in sport mode, because I think sport mode, I think they just take out any kind of software management of it, and it's literally just a binary. The minute you let your foot off the accelerator, it's like full regen. And at least in normal mode or eco mode, there's a degree of transition, right? And also eco mode, so it dulls the accelerator. But in sport mode, I don't drive it in that mode, because it feels mechanical. It feels like I'm driving like a combustion mechanical car, because the minute you let your foot off, the car goes clunk as it starts to then, like, full regen. But look, that's a 20 grand Chinese car. I wouldn't want it on a nice Rivian.
Right. John Sheck says, Kyle, don't let it go. Get it repaired under warranty. You paid a lot for that truck. Yes, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, we got a list, and we'll make a service appointment. And Rivian service has been really responsive and great to us. For example, we picked up the truck and some of the accessories weren't ready, and they literally brought them to the house. We're like, no, we'll just come down to the service center. It's an hour, no problem. And they're like, oh, we already got other things going on in Fort Collins. We'll just swing by. I wasn't home. They unlocked the truck, installed everything, and it was great. Worked out really well.
Right. Sweet. So what else? So you also had a Model S Plaid update. So you got back from Europe, you did the podcast, then you jumped in the Model S Plaid to go to California for a Tesla takeover event, and got to hang out with some cool people. So there was, like, one picture of you online with a bunch of number of different Tesla YouTubers, like Tesla Joy and Raj, Andy Sly. I'm trying to think who else was in that. A Tesla Latino. He's a great guy.
Yep. Really good time. Yeah, nice event. The Model S is just a one hell of a great road tripping car. I, you know, have some issues with the car, but there's no car I don't. So I think I just can't get myself comfortable in it. The seat doesn't go far low enough. The yoke wasn't doing it for me personally. So these are all things we can kind of adapt. The brakes literally don't do anything. I don't know any other way to describe it, because I had it out in the desert in some de-restricted areas, wink, wink. And, like, you hit the brakes at, 163 miles an hour. By the way, it only does 163. And when you put it in track mode, I think it unlocks up to 175. Where's the 200 mile an hour thing we were promised? What's going on with that?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, maybe never.
2 weeks. In 2 weeks.
So anyway, not that you should ever go that fast on public roads, and I never would. No. But the brakes don't do anything at speed. So I have massive Mountain Pass Performance brakes that we need to install. They're sitting in the garage below me right now. the car is amazing. Between having version 3 superchargers and the CCS adapter, which can do 500 amps, really rips on the charging. We made two full road trip videos, one out and one back, and you'll be able to see all that. And it was just really, really a great car. Great car.
It's amazing how it still looks good, like 10 years after it debuted.
It looks amazing.
It's changed a little bit. It's like, I think it's, I don't know, it's like a little bulgier on the back and stuff now.
It's widened up, especially in the front. Like this front angle with the Martian MW05s on that front corner look amazing. The rear wheels, we have a 5mm spacer just to push them out just a little bit more because it needs a little bit more in the rear. But we kind of are fine-tuning the setup and the car looks incredible. Really good.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right. Anything else you wanted to tell us about the Tesla takeover or the Model S Plaid?
Yeah, Tesla takeover was a great event. We have a huge Tesla audience that I didn't realize we had. So really awesome to see a lot of Tesla owners who are also EV enthusiasts. I think a lot of people assume, Tesla owners are locked in their world and they're, have Elon tattooed all over them. It just wasn't really like that. There was a lot of real enthusiasts there wanting to talk about cars and very open to other brands of EVs. So I would say a fantastic event. Great people were there. So much fun. And spoke to a whole hundreds of people throughout the whole thing for hours and hours. And had dinner with Sandy afterwards. We spent many hours together, him and his team and ours, and we really had a great time. So maybe we'll do some things up at Monroe. Can't recommend next year's event enough. Really enjoyed it.
Sweet. I saw a few people on Twitter saying that they met you and they're pretty excited to meet one of their favorite YouTubers. So I thought
that was a weird world we're living in. Watch me on YouTube, which is crazy because I assume people just click on the videos and go to sleep, which is kind of what we want you to do. Ads play.
Sorry. That was that loud.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Tom, you want to talk about your Ford F-150 Lightning a little bit? I'm not sure if you were driving anything else this week.
Well, we did the standard range F-150 Lightning range test. I don't think we talked about that last week, right?
Honestly, we were about to. You had shot the video, but we didn't get into the results. I think.
Yeah. So I got
your charging issues with it.
Yeah. So I got. Yeah. Oh, that's right. My issue, not that. So my local dealer loaned me their Standard Range Pro Lightning, which I referred to earlier. It's the white one in the video there, and mine is the black Lariat with the extended range next to it. And that's their static vehicle. All the Ford dealerships have to have one for 6 months to give test drives. Then they're allowed to sell it. And I asked, just like Kyle mentioned earlier, about a dealer by him that has a long waiting list. They have so many people that want to buy this they're certainly going to sell it for more than MSRP. And I don't have any problem with them doing that because it's an inventory car that they got in stock to keep for 6 months for test drives. I have a problem when people mark up the specific orders that people make like I did, but this is going to go for way more than MSRP. And it, quite honestly, it should. And I said it in the video that it's ridiculous that I could have two of those and pay $2,000 extra, I could have two of those trucks for what I paid for my truck. And that's just ridiculous. So anyway, we did the 70-mile-an-hour highway range test where I took my truck. My friend Pete drove my truck behind me because I wanted to see what the state of charge is in my vehicle when we completed the range test on this. I did the 70-mile-an-hour range test with my truck about 2 weeks ago. It ended up with 270 miles, a little bit more than what Kyle got when he did the range test with a Platinum. And I should have gone further because the Platinum doesn't go quite as far because it's heavier and has bigger wheels. So I went 270 miles, 131 kilowatt hour battery pack. I took the 98 kilowatt hour battery pack, standard range Lightning, drove next to mine, and we went 214 miles, which was pretty good in my opinion. Its EPA combined range rating is 230. So the highway range rating, I think, was 202. So we beat the EPA highway range rating. And you could see from the screenshot on the screen, if you're watching us on YouTube, it was incredibly consistent for the four quarters, which means that the Ford's really their state of charge estimator is locked in. And it really did well. We don't typically see the numbers that tight for each quarter of the range test. And, you know, it was fantastic as far as I was concerned. I was hoping that we did 200 miles, 214, and I didn't drive it till it stopped. I'm sure it had a mile or two left in the battery, probably not much more than that, because I did drive it for a while after it hit zero. But, you know, for the standard range battery pack, 215 miles, 14 miles at highway range, at highway speeds, that's pretty darn good as far as I'm concerned. Agreed. And my vehicle ended with 30% state of charge.
Sweet. So how did you feel once you got down to that like low percentage? Was there the pedal response much different?
No, it maintained pretty good pedal response up until the very end. So, okay. You know, Kyle drove his Lightning, I think 8 miles after it went to zero, the in his range test. I think I only drove this 3 miles, and you know, Kyle ran out and had to push it to the charging station. I wasn't going to do that. I think Pete would have had a heart attack. But you know, so we ended up with 2.2 miles per kilowatt hour, slightly better than what we ended up with my Lariat when I did the range test.
Right, which you would expect to be slightly more. It's a little bit lighter, I guess, so a little more efficient.
Yeah, and it's got the 18-inch tire and wheels compared to the 20-inch tire and wheels. But the weird thing is, that is what I would expect. But afterwards, I took a look at the official EPA range ratings, and the Lariat with extended range battery pack that I had, actually, their EPA range rating shows that it's slightly more efficient than the standard range Pro, which is lighter with the 18-inch wheels. I don't really know why, but that was the case. So, you know. But that's, you know, EPA range test is different than what we do in real world. You know, you really can't compare. They're completely different types of range testing.
Right. So I guess we're going to have to get a hold of the new the Pro again once it has software updated. See if you can get that 10 miles.
It wouldn't make any difference at all, because I did it in the summer when we don't use the heated seats.
Right.
We really only make a difference in the winter when you use the heated seats and then use less cabin heating.
So they say they're giving us 10 more miles. Are they going to get it recertified with the EPA to add that on there?
I suppose they will be.
Okay.
Because they wouldn't come out and say it if they, you know, I would expect, you know, maybe the next year, model year is going to have that.
Because in my mind, I'm thinking like, why? I'm not sure what I'm thinking. yeah. I don't know. Let's just move on, I guess. I don't know. Anything else? You're driving anything else this week?
I think Tom missed a trick here by not running it down to zero. I mean, he had a tow car ready. He had a car that could have recharged it from its power port thing. It's like, you know, there's so many YouTube videos you could have made. Just drive the thing till it conks out, Tom. You had a tow car.
So that was the backup plan. Okay. But the thing is, you know, I try to maintain 70 miles an hour as much as possible. And when I turned off the turn, because I do this on New Jersey Turnpike, it's not the best place to run out, to be pulled over on the side of the road recharging. The shoulder is narrow. Cars are whizzing by you. So really wasn't the best place to do that. And if I would have been able to, you know, when I do these range tests at the end, there's like another 10 mile loop I can do. And I keep doing it. If it would have worked out where I was only like 4 or 5 miles past zero, I would have done another loop. But as the range test turned out, because I was figuring on 200 miles and then it went further. So it threw off my whole calculation on when I arrive at the charging station. So when I was getting off the highway, it was just hitting 0 miles range. If I would have gone to the next turnaround, now it's 10 miles. Now I would have definitely run out on the turnpike. So I got off at zero, and then there's a secondary road that I can drive, but I'm not driving at 70 miles an hour. I'm driving at about 40, 50 miles an hour. And I thought it would be, you know, it would have been a gimmick if I would have ran out there and pulled over into a road and plugged it in and do it. So I was talking to Pete about it, and he was already you know, if I was going to give him a signal that I'm running out, and he was going to put the hazards on and pull behind me so nobody hit me. And I just, at the end, I said, you know what? It's a gimmick, and I'm not about a gimmick. So I, you know, maybe it makes it more boring for me, but I didn't want to do it just to show people, oh, look, it can charge, you know? So we didn't do it, but we were ready if it did. If I could have timed it so we were on the highway or just getting off the highway, we were going to do that. That was the backup plan. And I have to comment on one thing. Cicero Holmes poured out, I'd hate to see your toll bill looks like. So yeah, that is like the turnpike is really expensive to drive on. It's a toll road,
oh, really?
But it is the only road near me that I know I can maintain 70 miles an hour. That's flat. Like I could do Route 80, no problem, but there's huge hills. I'd be climbing 500 feet, 700 feet going up and down. So the turnpike works out the best, but it's the most expensive road for me to drive on. So when I typically do a range test, I pay about $75 in tolls.
Wow. Yeah,
that's how expensive it is.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Because don't forget, I go up and down the complete turnpike. You know, a Mini Cooper might only be $20 in tolls. But, you know, when I'm driving these EVs now that are going 200 to 300, and the EQS did 400 miles, like that was the most I paid. It's like $60-$70 in tolls I pay just to do a range test.
Yeah. How long is the turnpike? I guess it's not that long.
So I drive about 100 miles, and then that's the end. That's where the state ends, and it's Delaware. And then I turn around and head back up. Then I turn around. What kills me is every time I get off, I pay again, and then I get back on when I do these loops. And, you know, it just I'll look at my bill afterwards. The first one will be the most expensive because I drive 100 miles. I'll get off. That'll be like, whatever, $22 or something. Then I'll turn around. The next one will be, you know, 18. Then it'll be 20. And yeah, it adds up. It's expensive. And this range test, I had to pay for two trucks. So I paid a lot. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
You need to do some UEs there before you get to the toll booth at the end.
Yeah, I pay a lot. It's not fun.
I mean, there's no way to turn around once you're on the thing. You can't change directions without.
You could illegally. You could swing a U-turn where you're not supposed to, but you have to go through the tolls, you know, right, the way you're supposed to do it. And now that we're talking about this, I should be billing Inside EVs for that as an additional charge, because I do these range tests for Inside EVs and I just eat that. Like,
right. Yeah. Well, tend to negotiate a new contract.
I think we're onto something here.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely a taxable expense at the end of the year. You don't, that's a business expense. Wow.
Well, it is on my business credit card. I have my Easy Pass linked to my business credit card.
Wow. There you go. Who knew?
So, see, anything else we want to talk about this week? You're driving. So you didn't have any other vehicles, Kyle? Just your Rivian and the Model S Plaid? There's no crazy. You always have something up to your sleeve. I guess you spent a lot of time with your Range Rover this week, which is not electric. Yeah.
Well, that was just yesterday. It broke down after 15 miles after a major service, typical Range Rover stuff. Been traveling a lot. So had, just basically back and forth to California, drove some cool stuff. Nothing really major. Came back to my Model 3 kind of not working. AC charge. The onboard charger is pretty much dead in the car. So it just supercharges at the moment. The AC fan, we made a video about it. I would say definitely needs some TLC. Probably, I don't know how much Tesla is going to charge me to fix the onboard charger. I hear a lot of the early cars are going out and they are not covering them under warranty. So I'm expecting them to say, you need a whole new battery. And I'll say, okay, I'll just bring it to an electrified garage. I don't know. We'll see what they say. I think
that's AC charging. What?
Yeah. So it supercharges just fine.
I don't understand then. That should be AC charging is so much less stress. I mean, I know you got to convert.
It requires a whole new component though.
The car hasn't had much AC charging actually, which is funny. Less than half of the energy that has gone in has been using the onboard charger. So it only has the equivalent of about 50,000 miles of driving on AC charging. The rest has all been supercharging in CHAdeMO. And so, just things when you own cars, stuff breaks. It's just been a week of everything breaking. And Alyssa took the e-tron through the car wash and it poured water all over the inside of her. So that's going in to get service. So it's like everything has something that needs to get fixed.
Right. And you're going to put all new suspension on this Model 3 too. That's a good video actually you have going around your car and pointing out the issues it has after 100 and whatever thousand miles.
Yeah, a lot of it's all pretty much caused by us, except this AC noise, this fan noise, and the onboard charger. The rest is like windshield cracks and little things like that. But we have a whole Mountain Pass Performance coilover setup going on that we're lifting the car. We have some knobby off-road tires. It's going to be a rally spec Model 3, and it'll look really cool all that way. And then the Model S is going track spec.
I wonder what kind of range we're going to get. So if I borrow your car and I'm traveling on the Trans-Canada, is it going to cut the range down so far that I'm not going to be able to make it to the supercharger stations?
No, I don't think that'll be an issue, but it's certainly not going to be as efficient as a brand new one would be. And it's got some 10% degradation and stuff, but you'll be able to go. I mean, keep in mind, people drive Model X 60s in Canada still. So this is going to have a lot more range than early Model X stuff will.
Okay. So not to worry. Okay.
I would say zero worry. There's plenty of chargers wherever you go now.
Right. That's true. And more on the way. All right. So I think we should wrap it up there. All right.
There you go.
So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. Big Cat, Big Dog says, Dom, order your Bolt today. I should probably make some calls and see what's out there in my neighborhood.
You will kick yourself if you don't. You will kick yourself if you don't. Did we mention that Configurator's gone live for 2023 model year Bolt? They kept putting it back and putting it back, and it is now live. That might have been last week's show. I forget, but either way, it's got the $6,000 price decrease factored in now. It's bargain of the century. Everyone should buy a Bolt.
Absolutely.
Good to know. So if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.